to the KTEP Book Club on Perspectives. I'm your host, Louis Sines. Joining us today is Dr. Richard Whiteman Fox. Dr. Fox is a professor of history at the University of Southern California and the author of Jesus in America and Trials of Intimacy. His latest book is called Lincoln's Body, A Cultural History. Richard, thanks for being with us here today.
Very glad to be with you.
Now, there has been this fascination, I guess, maybe it comes and goes, but in the last few years, there's been a kind of a fascination about Lincoln. And it started with Doris Kearns Goodwin's book, Team of Rivals, and then after that, the movie with Spielberg, and people just love to talk about Lincoln. Why is that?
There are so many reasons why, but you're right. There is a bit of an ebb and flow with Lincoln, and the mid-90s was certainly a time of revival with the book that really started that revival was Gary Wills's Lincoln at Gettysburg. And then you're right, in the mid-2000s, Doris Goodwin's book, and then Spielberg's movie, in fact, the presidency of Barack Obama, he announced his candidacy in Springfield outside the old State House. And I think there has been, since Goodwin's book, 2005, Obama's presidency, Spielberg's movie, a real intensity of focus around Lincoln. And that now 150 years of that focus, this being the anniversary of the 150th of the assassination. I think the main reason is that Lincoln is simply, as Doris Goodwin's made clear, an irresistible character in both senses of character, sort of a strangely appealing, odd person. And also, he has a depth of character that many, many writers, orators, everyday people have found irresistible since 1860 when he was a candidate for president. I think just to say one more word about the character side, which in 1865 was closely tied to his physical body, because then people thought of the physical body as revealing a person's character. But the character focus has been constant over 150 years, and it's because there's actual drama in Lincoln's character. How could someone start with nothing, with no money, no family sponsorship, no education, no military career? How could somebody from such a humble background rise to the very top of American politics? That has never been a question one can answer. And so one can simply stand back and admire this character who has so many dimensions, we'll never be able to make sense of all of them.
Dr. Richard Whiteman Fox, he is the author of Lincoln's Body, A Cultural History. It starts off talking about Abraham Lincoln and the assassination. And you mentioned in your book that as soon as the president lost conscience, that the myth started right away.
Definitely. And in fact, I have one chapter even before the assassination, which shows that as early as 1840, Lincoln was becoming mythical in the Middle West. It's just that the national audience hadn't yet picked up the signal. He was regarded as a very unusual person in his looks, in his way of doing politics. He was always out with the people, and he never stopped doing that, even when he was president. He wanted people to come and see him in the White House. He wanted to get out and see them. Most famously for me, his walk through downtown Richmond, Virginia on April 4th, 1865, 10 days before his death. And so well before the assassination, he was iconic in American culture. It's simply that the death on April 15th, having been shot the night before at Fort Sitter, he died early in the morning of Saturday, April 15th. When that happened, a large national audience who had followed Lincoln now for 4 years, 5 years, decided that God had acted. This was a providential act of removing Lincoln in order to, according to many Republicans, make way for a tougher president, Andrew Johnson, who would really punish the traitors who had rebelled against the nation. I think the reaction was different among different groups. Black Americans, for example, didn't find this a tolerable outcome, whereas many white, especially Republicans, found, as I say, that Andrew Johnson might actually do better at leading the Reconstruction period. What Black Americans did was keep alive from that point forward the idea that Lincoln was irreplaceable as an advocate of further emancipation for them and therefore for building a republic of equality. I think the April 15th death of Lincoln was like a great explosion of anger. It was an explosion, actually, of love for Lincoln on the part of many outside of the white Southerners and outside of a few groups in the North, like Irish Catholics. There was an outpouring of love for Lincoln, and that generation passed their love for Lincoln onto their children. They made a point of bringing their children to see the corpse of Abraham Lincoln when it was put on display in 12 cities over the three weeks after his death. That explosive commitment to Lincoln that was registered in 1865 then simply reverberated through American culture ever since. And it's partly because Lincoln was removed so suddenly at the peak of his powers, as Americans considered him the great Republican president who had been stolen from them. As you say, his consciousness went dead at Ford's Theater, even though his body soldiered on for another 9 hours. Indeed, his body staying alive for 9 hours after his mind was dead, that struck many people at the time as a sign of his enormous, unusual strength as a Republican leader.
We're visiting with Dr. Richard Wipen Fox. He is the author of Lincoln's Body, A Cultural History. And we're discussing the book and how Lincoln is, even 150 years later, is still very popular and very well liked among people. And you mentioned President Obama declaring his candidacy in Springfield. He also, correct me if I'm wrong, may have taken a tip from the book A Team of Rivals by selecting his contender, Senator Clinton, as his Secretary of State, much like President Lincoln did with Seward.
That's exactly right. And I think probably Obama would have come up with that idea independently, but we'll never know because he was a student of Lincoln going well back before he ever was in politics. He had read Lincoln as a college student, and then once he was in politics, Lincoln truly did become his model. There was a lot of criticism of Obama in 2005. He gave a speech at the Abraham Lincoln Library in Springfield on the same platform with President Bush, and he, you know, didn't compare himself to Lincoln. He just said that Lincoln mattered a great deal to him, and he wanted to pattern himself after Lincoln. He was criticized for allegedly comparing himself to Lincoln, and that, I think, was unfair to him. Whatever one may think of his presidency, it's simply, I think, according to Obama, a goal that every American, Democrat, Republican, ought to embrace. Lincoln is such an inspiring character that everyone would benefit from thinking about him. The simple fact that he was such a self-made man, and that phrase was used about Lincoln as early as 1840 when he was just a young state politician in Illinois, the self-making was something that has captured the imagination of blacks, whites, southerners, northerners. It's something that everyone, I think, can really benefit from. And, you know, we all know his Gettysburg Address and we know his second inaugural. Those are his two most famous speeches. But for understanding his character, there are other speeches, like his message to Congress on July 4th, 1861. He convened Congress to, when it wasn't in session, to come and hear him address the moment of the early months of the war. And in that speech, he really clears up something that you can't get from the second inaugural or the Gettysburg Address. It's that he himself was personally committed to this fight against the rebellion. And he says he decided that he could not consider even the chances of his own life, meaning he was going to put himself in harm's way. That was how serious this battle was. And as many of his advisors regretted during the course of the war, he did put himself out in public on many occasions when security-conscious president would not have. So when he was finally shot on April 14, 1865, the editor of the New York Times, Henry Raymond, wrote in an editorial, "It's not surprising that Lincoln was just shot. What's surprising is that it didn't happen long before this." So he put himself at risk, and in doing so, tried to model for other people how one would be a Republican president, that is, a small R Republican president, somebody who's conscious of not wanting to act like a monarch, somebody who is a people's representative. That's the kind of person who would immerse himself in the people's lives. He would not hold himself apart. Monarchs were aloof and implying thereby that they were better than other people. Lincoln wanted to imply, on the contrary, that he was just like other people, and he was only temporarily in office at the behest of the people, and then he would go back to being a plain citizen as soon as he was finished with his elected term. That's why his body is so important all the way through his career and in the memory of Lincoln that Americans have maintained for 150 years. He looked like a simple, ordinary person. And in fact, everybody at the time, Lincoln included, thought he was ugly. And his ability to joke about his ugliness is another factor in making people absolutely love him. He was endearing because of that humility about his appearance, along with his humility about everything else. Another part of the drama of his self, the fact that he could be so genuinely humble, even as he's this very confident leader and indeed warrior, he is full of contradictions. And that's what makes the character of Lincoln so infinitely inspiring, I think, but also just complicated and interesting to try to fathom.
We're visiting with Dr. Richard Whiteman Fox. He is the author of the book, Lincoln's Body, A Cultural History. In your book, there are various passages here talking about what you just mentioned about his looks. Mr. Lincoln was the homeliest man I ever saw, according to journalist Don Piatt. His body seemed to me like a huge skeleton in clothes. Some people said he was just plain ugly, so ugly it was almost beautiful. Uglier than any of his pictures. And then some people in the beginning, also chapter one, you mentioned that what changed people's minds was getting to see him in person. They hear the rumors, I guess, because no television back then, no camera angles, anything like that. You got the raw deal just like he went before. And so what changed that? And why did people think that he was ugly? Because looking back now, some people will look at other presidents and they'll go, wow, you know, this guy was a lot worse looking than President Lincoln.
Right. People can see the cover of my book. You can see it online. It shows a picture of Lincoln that we today rarely see. And it's the kind of picture that helps explain why people at the time thought he was ugly. And he himself agreed with them. He was asymmetrical. And that was, symmetry was a really big part of what made a person beautiful in those days. And people thought of George Washington as this really beautiful man because he was shaped correctly. Sort of the thin waist rising up to muscular shoulders, and not like Lincoln, a man whose legs were almost the whole story. Lincoln was short-waisted and long-legged. People even thought of it as misproportioned. That's part of why ugly made so much sense. In fact, people often said ugly and grotesque, and they meant by grotesque not quite what we mean by it. We think of that as being sort of hideous looking. But then it meant also that a person was sort of strange looking, as if he was from some other planet. We'd never seen a person like this before who was 6'4" with thin shoulders and even a thin chest front to back. He just seemed like almost a scarecrow, we might say. And that made people laugh. It also is part of that drama of his character. And you mentioned that quotation from the journalist Don Piatt. He said, as many people did, that, you know, if you looked at Lincoln and watched him long enough, you would see him pass from ugliness to beauty in his face, because he would become excited by an idea, or he would get involved in a conversation. And as soon as that happened, his features were transformed. He suddenly became almost gloriously alive and illuminated from within. And so you see how the ugliness to beauty movement in Lincoln was one more aspect of the drama in his character. And I think the dramatic movement from ugliness to body, or rather ugliness to beauty in him, made his body central to his character. And it also gave people one more reason for thinking that Lincoln was special. There was always this movement within his character that was unlike that of any other person.
We're visiting with Dr. Richard Whiteman Fox, author of the book Lincoln's Body, A Cultural History. Perspectives will continue right after this.
This is David Green, host of NPR's Morning Edition. NPR correspondent Eleanor Beardsley is no stranger to covering conflict. She covered the Tunisian Revolution and also the fighting in Ukraine. But this year, the conflict came to her when she got a call about a shooting at the headquarters of a satirical magazine in Paris.
I just jumped into a cab and went to the scene. So I got there pretty quickly. And the whole block had just sort of descended into the street, and people were in a state of shock, and it was still, you know, the sirens were going everywhere. It was still sort of unfolding. A journalist's cell phone captured the sound of the killing ram. The difference was this was in my hometown. And so I would take my son to school in the morning, and there'd be a huge sign on the door, Vigipirate, which is like the high terror alert. There were three soldiers on my street posted in front of a synagogue. Just these reminders in my daily life that things had drastically changed. And so it just took on all kinds of new levels of complexity.
A bang, people are starting to run. They're shooting. I think it's shooting, Steve.
Eleanor, make sure.
Steve, I'm not going to go.
Make sure you're undercover, Eleanor.
People are out.
When you're out there reporting the news in sometimes really stressful conditions, I see how journalists, if it weren't for journalists, so many things wouldn't be known. And that's the key to a free society, that things can be reported on everywhere in the world.
Eleanor and other NPR journalists worked around the clock to bring us the full coverage of the Charlie Hebdo shootings. And we benefited from their smarts, their expertise, and their years of experience. The financial support of sustaining members makes reporting like this possible. Sustaining members ensure that we'll be able to continue to provide breaking news coverage from the best journalists in the business around the world and right here at home. Please become a sustaining member right now, and we thank you.
Make your pledge online today at ktep.org.
We're visiting with Dr. Richard Whiteman Fox, author of the book Lincoln's Body, A Cultural History. As we have been talking about the fact that people would look at him and they'd say, well, you need to do something about that. And, you know, they brought in the rail that he chopped to bring it in for the convention, and they tried to do as much as they could to play him up because of his looks. But there's a story that everybody is familiar with, is that little 12-year-old Grace Bedell, who wrote a letter to him and saying to he should grow some whiskers. And I liked the point in your book, you mentioned how Lincoln was speaking and somebody pointed out the little girl to him in the audience, and he just dove out there.
That's right.
And started kissing her.
Yeah, and there's another example of how Lincoln is most comfortable when he's in the midst of people. And, you know, as I said before, he even made his White House office a place where that kind of contact happened. The Grace Bedell episode in 1861 shows how conscious he was of his appearance and how he and his advisors wanted, if possible, to improve his looks. And that meant both growing the beard. I think he would have done it without Grace Bedell's letter, but that was a nice symbolic peg for him as he tried to become more presidential looking with his beard. But I think the main point is that, as you nicely point out, he used that occasion to get out there in the midst of the crowd. He wanted people to see him up close, because once they saw him in his engagement or his having a good time, then they would see that he actually wasn't ugly. I felt that as he kept inviting more and more people into his office, it's clear that not only did he want to hear from them, he often said that these meetings in his office were a kind of public opinion bath for him. He heard what the people were really thinking. But what he was also doing is showing them his body and letting them see that all the talk of ugliness was sort of beside the point when you got to look at him and you got to hear him speak. Of course, he had no assets, as I said before, when he started out his political career, and that was a dramatic element in his character. But he did have one asset. His father, a subsistence farmer in Kentucky, Indiana, and Illinois, had the gift of storytelling, and he passed that on to Abraham Lincoln. And we wouldn't be able to conceive of Lincoln without his storytelling and his humor. He is maybe our funniest president. And, you know, much as we can compare other presidents to him, I think in that respect, he really is unique. He had learned this kind of dialect of humor in Kentucky as a child, Indiana, then Illinois, and he just made that his calling card.
Some people compare, talk about President Kennedy, another president who was assassinated, and there was even several albums, LPs that came out,
right.
The wit and humor of President Kennedy at the White House.
Yeah.
And then you see him at the news conferences, and he's kind of wanting to be with the people also. And then even his funeral, Mrs. Kennedy wanted it to be like the Lincoln funeral.
Yes, right. I think you're onto something there, and I would have to partly retract what I said about the funniest president, but I wouldn't retract it all the way, because Lincoln simply was one of those people who can stand up at any time and speak humorously. And I think Kennedy's humor was probably more controlled. He was very witty in a kind of repartee way. And if you look online at the time he spoke in Houston to the ministers and spoke about the separation of church and state, you can even catch his humor and wit in that venue, which was a really serious one. And his whole political career appeared to be at stake because he was a Catholic. And would Americans vote for a Catholic? Even in that setting, Kennedy showed his wit. But I think with Lincoln, there's a kind of range of humor, from sort of broad humor to more kind of controlled repartee kind of humor, as in the case in New York City when he was going through in 1861 on his way to Washington to be inaugurated, and the mayor of New York put Lincoln on the spot by arranging an event with a big crowd where two hat makers appeared, and they each gave Lincoln a hat. And the mayor of New York then forced Lincoln to say which hat he liked the best. And without missing a beat, Lincoln came right back with, "They mutually surpass one another." And that, I think, shows the kind of Kennedy-Lincoln match. I think Kennedy could have done something like that too. But Lincoln had this infinite supply of funny stories that he could bring up anytime, anywhere. And in fact, he used those stories to often camouflage what he was really thinking. He didn't want to give people direct answers to their questions about his policy choices. So he would give them a story instead.
And sometimes that would frustrate his cabinet, like especially Edward Stanton, correct?
Yes, definitely Stanton. And Spielberg did a nice job of showing that in his movie when Lincoln starts in on one of his long-winded stories. Stanton said, "I can't stand this," and he marches out. And I think that's very accurate. Other cabinet members, too, felt he was just wasting their time with these stories. And Lincoln told them explicitly that he had to tell these stories because it was his way of ridding himself of some of the anxiety of the wartime events.
We're visiting with Dr. Richard Whiteman Fox. He is the author of the book, Lincoln's Body, A Cultural History. Richard, now we're talking about Lincoln's body. What is there to talk about the body? But there's so much to talk about the body.
Yeah,
the fact
that
it was, you know, they tried to steal it so many times. And then the long funeral train so people could see it. And what I understand is that the embalmers had to keep working on him because he was out for so many days. So tell us a little bit about how his body and his imagery and everything else is carried over the years.
Yes, well, I can do it briefly by just saying that, as you already pointed out, the body of Abraham Lincoln is itself a huge subject, and it's been a huge subject for now 150 years. And even before he died, people were talking about his body for the 25 years before that, because he was already conscious of using his body in politics to show what a simple citizen he was and to show how, once you saw him in person, you liked him. And that forced him, in effect, it wasn't something he didn't want to do. He liked being out with people, but he understood it was politically essential for him to do that. So let me just sum up the whole story of the body by saying that it involved his looks, it involved his accessibility, putting his body out in public. It involved the withering of his body while president. We've seen that with many presidents, but people talked about that all the time in the 1860s, how the presidency and the war was reducing him to a shadow of himself. People widely predicted early in 1865 that he would die in office just from fatigue. And then lastly, the sacrifice of his body, the martyrdom, that just made his body the central story for quite a long time. And it's only in the 20th century, I think, that his words became the main story. So the Gettysburg Address, the second inaugural, when the Lincoln Memorial was built in or dedicated in 1922, it was obvious that the words of Lincoln were just as important. The Gettysburg Address in the South Hall, the second inaugural in the North Hall, as the body represented in the great Daniel Chester French statue. In the funeral processions and pageants after his assassination, of course, the body was everything. And people were desperate to get to those events. Hundreds of thousands of people marched in those events, and then many, many more stood on the sidewalk watching, and millions more got to see the train go by, although they didn't get to see the body. And I can just give you one case of how important this was to people and how moving it was. The body arrived in New York City from New Jersey. It was in a hearse on a barge coming across the Hudson River, and the people massed on the side of Manhattan waiting for the arrival of the hearse, they could hear a chorus singing an ode from the Roman Horace. They could hear the music of the dirge coming over the water before they could see the hearse. And then the hearse is unloaded in Manhattan and driven down to City Hall. 900 singers are there waiting. And when the body is taken out of the hearse and carried up the steps of City Hall, the chorus starts singing Wagner's Tannhäuser. And I commend to everyone that moment. Go online and listen to Tannhäuser's Pilgrim's Chorus, and you'll get a sense of what people were hearing when Lincoln's body went up the steps of City Hall. It's one of the most moving songs that you will ever hear. It's almost impossible not to listen to it today online and break into tears just thinking about Lincoln's body being carried up those steps.
And not only was he popular in America, but around the world. Leo Tolstoy tells a story about one of his travels when he was speaking to some native people, and he told them about the great generals, the great people, and that the chief said, wait a minute, you haven't told us about one man.
Right. That's a very common phenomenon overseas, starting, you know, even 1865. There was tremendous grief about the loss of Lincoln. I've studied this in the case of France in particular, and that moment in French history was crucial because there was a Republican movement trying to displace the autocracy, and they relied on Lincoln in order to raise support for their own cause. And when, after the death, the Republicans of France had a gold medal struck, which was paid for entirely out of the small contributions of Republicans around the nation, and that gold medal was sent and delivered to Mary Lincoln.
We have been visiting with Richard Whiteman Fox, the author of the book Lincoln's Body, A Cultural History. Richard, thank you very much for taking the time to share with us, and we could have talked for hours. This is a fascinating book and a fascinating conversation. Thank you so much for joining us.
And thank you for having me.
Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Norma Martinez. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Luis Sainz.